Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down, my blood sugar is down, my weight's down, my health is up, my sleeping patterns are better, my metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to the John Solomon Reports podcast. I'm your guest host, Ben Whedon, and I'm the evening editor at Just the News. I'll be with you for the rest of the week. Don't worry, though. John Solomon is coming back next week, and you'll only have me for just a few more days. Today, we're going to be talking to a senior congressional leader in charge of the House Oversight Subcommittee on National Security, the Border, and Foreign Affairs. In light of House Speaker Mike Johnson's plan to introduce 3 separate foreign aid bills, as well as a supplementary border package that's attracted considerable attention and the endorsement of President Joe Biden, we're certainly going to be well within his wheelhouse. We'll get right into the details of it after the break.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
All right, everybody, welcome back from the break. I'm here with Congressman Glenn Grothman, representing Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. He's also the chairman of the Oversight Subcommittee on National Security, the Border, and Foreign Affairs. Congressman, great to have you with us.
Glad to be on the show.
Well, it certainly seems like it's going to be your week with this, with all of this legislation that's coming onto the House floor today. House Speaker Mike Johnson's unveiled the text of 3 different foreign aid bills, plans to bring on a 4th package with sanctions and a few other provisions in there, and later even a border bill. So we're covering everything on your everything in your subcommittee's purview here. So these bills are, I've had a chance to review some of them. Mostly look like they're looking at something similar to what's in the original Senate package that got sent over that he didn't want to vote on, but he split them into 3, and then there's these other 2 bills. The text is going to be coming at some point in the near future, we expect. Can you give me your thoughts on this approach, you know, actually splitting them up? Is there any advantage to this or at all?
No, it doesn't matter. The disappointment is this. We can pass a separate border bill, but unless we get an agreement with President Biden, we know that that's irrelevant. And I think what a lot of us were hoping for is either combining the border bill with some of these foreign aid bills, or at least getting a verbal commitment from President Biden that if we, a public commitment, that if we give him his foreign aid for Israel or Taiwan or whatever, he will agree that he's going to close the border or do something different down there or pass a border bill we give him. But we are not negotiating this with President Biden, which to me means to a degree we're giving up. It means that we cannot do what we have to do on the border until we get a new president sworn in. So you're talking like 8 months away, which is to me ridiculous. And it's a little bit of a disappointment. You don't want to have a partisan fight. But I think this border situation is the biggest crisis for the country really since the Civil War. I mean, when you're taking in, say, 250,000 people a month, 3 million new people a year, that's going to fundamentally change America. It's going to make it poorer. It's going to bring up people who may or may not have the respect for civil liberties and freedom that we have in America. And like I said, you're setting up a situation that I think Barack Obama wanted when he said he wanted to fundamentally change America. You bring in this volume of people, you're going to fundamentally change America. And this bill or group of bills is the last chance for the Republicans in the House to try to force Joe Biden and the Democrats to do something.
Okay. So with this additional border bill that we don't have the details of at this coming or at this point, I've seen it reported that's going to have the core focus of H.R. 2, which was the border bill the House has already passed and that, you know, as you noted, languished in the Senate and didn't go anywhere. Do you see anything at all where this could be, you know, tied in, or is this just going to fall flat?
Well, we'll pass it. But unless we get an agreement from the Biden administration that he wants it on his desk and he'll sign it, it's pointless. I mean, there's an education value, right? One more time we pass the bill, it will be apparent to the American public that both their Democrat senators and the president don't care at all how many people come across the border. They're not negotiating. They won't move these bills. But in addition to educating the public one more time that Joe Biden doesn't care, it does little, right? Because you're right. It's just going to languish sitting in the Senate, and that's the disappointment. That's why some of us wanted a negotiation and an agreement in which Joe Biden, in order to get his money for Ukraine or wherever, has to say, these are the things I'm going to get at the border. Example. We could hold up and say, we want Joe Biden to agree to sign a bill saying that illegal immigrants cannot vote, clarifying that in the law. Now, Joe Biden's not going to do that, right? Because we believe that though they would deny it, we believe some voting by illegals is one of the reasons they're getting more people here. But it's an example of something we could try to hold out to get.
So, Even with this package, they're now separated out. We have these three different aid bills that are out there. The refrain that we've been hearing from Republicans is don't secure Ukraine's border until we secure our own. Certainly sounds like you're coming from that same way of thinking. But do we have any evidence, you know, any reason to suspect that what's in the Ukraine bill is going to accomplish a goal? You know, I've gone through it and, you know, while it does allocate funding to different branches of the armed services for procurement purposes, it's pretty nebulous about what they can be used for. In fact, the only specific weapon system even mentioned in the bill that I was able to find was these ATACM long-range missiles. And all that's saying is that Biden can give them to Ukraine if he wants, but has the discretion not to. So do we have where are these numbers coming from? It's $61 billion. You know, as I understand it, when we, in prior packages, you've signed off on a top line number, and then the Pentagon gets to go in and say, we're going to go value what we have in our warehouses and figure out what to send to Ukraine. You're not voting on an itemized list of equipment. Is that right?
Correct. And who knows what it's going for. I will say this. I planned on voting against a Ukraine bill anyway, and I voted for them in the past. I'm frustrated the Biden administration is not trying to push for some sort of peace agreement. Which is very frustrating. But as for the people who are going to vote to give Ukraine more aid, I would be a little disappointed, and it's a little bit short of details. That being said, you know, a lot of Ukrainians have died fighting Russia. I think we have a moral commitment to stick with them and allow them to fight some more. And so I really have nothing against my colleagues who are going to vote for more aid.
And you expect this bill to certainly pass at this point?
No question, because every Democrat's for it, and I'm guessing you'd get 35% to 45% of the Republicans for it.
And in this time frame, even if they have to go under suspension of the rules that maybe gets to that 2/3, you still think maybe so?
2/3 is going to be a tougher goal, but I think they'll get there, because I think you're going to have just under a half of the Republicans and 100% of the Democrats. So you combine those two numbers, I think you're going to get about 75% of the votes, which is more than enough to pass.
Now, there is one provision in the bill that might actually mollify conservatives to some degree, which is this requirement that, you know, the White House and the other agencies eventually, after 45 days of enactment, put together an actual report with a strategy. They have to update what they're trying to do and what they're using the money for, with listings of specific defense items, and give a quarterly update to Congress. It doesn't look like Congress gets a whole lot of, you know, input on what they've done, but they at least get the receipts. Is that a step towards oversight, or is that effectively meaningless in your eyes?
I guess it's a step in the right direction. It's kind of pathetic to say you had to wait 2 years to get it, isn't it?
Certainly so. So at this stage, there's also, you know, been discussion of, actually it's in the bill, of converting some of this into loan. But notably in this provision, there's a, you know, there's a line that's allowing President Joe Biden to cancel a decent amount of this specifically after mid-November, so after the election. What do you make of that? How does something like that get into the bill?
Well, I suppose you could say it's better than nothing, but I think given the precarious financial position Ukraine was in even before this war, I think as you vote on the bill, I think you almost have to consider that an empty promise. I mean, given the mess Ukraine is in, when this war is over, even if they win the war, I don't think you can expect them to all of a sudden be an economic dynamo, and I would be surprised if any of that money is paid off.
So not a whole lot of difference whether it's a loan or a grant. You're more or less writing it off at the end.
No, right, right.
Okay. So in light of the war, with the situation being where it is, there, you know, we're competing for resources in two different countries at this point. The Israel bill, by contrast, is discernibly more specific about what it's allocating its funds for. It's mostly going to Iron Dome, Iron Beam, David Sling. Almost overwhelming majority of that's air defense. Makes sense in light of the Iranian drone strikes and what the conflict has been over there. But that's pretty precious munitions that are valuable to both sides. So do you expect there's going to be some fairly hefty trade-offs in terms of actual resources between these two countries?
Well, I think the United States is immediately going to have to start producing more weapons. And it is true, if you look at the cost of the weapons or the cost of defense systems for Israel compared to the relatively cheap drones or rockets, it's a lot more expensive to defend against these missiles than it is to shoot the missiles in the first place, which is a very expensive proposition, but Israel is our ally and we'll continue to stick with them.
Certainly sounds like there's going to be some industrial issues to be looking at in the future to maintain defense capabilities. All right, folks, Congressman Glenn Grothman, we will be getting right back into the details of this after the break.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car.
That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, folks, welcome back from the break. I'm here with Congressman Glenn Grothman. We've been going into the details of the House proposals for foreign aid and the implications it has both for the America on the international stage and for Congress. I want to jump into the domestic side of things at this point. We've already seen multiple lawmakers indicate that they're going to attempt to block some of these bills in committee. House Speaker Mike Johnson is facing at least two lawmakers now calling for a motion to vacate, and he's doing so pushing forward with very unpopular foreign aid bills that have led to, I say unpopular, I mean within his own conference, of course, that have really fueled calls for a change in leadership. Congressman, do you see this having some significant backlash for the speaker?
No, first of all, I think Mike Johnson is more popular with our base. Not that Kevin was unpopular, but he's more popular. I think any Republican congressman, I don't care what district you're from, if you're making a motion for Mike Johnson to step down, I think you're going to get a relatively chilly reception when you return to the Republicans in your district. Secondly, I think as far as the eight people that kicked out Kevin McCarthy, they were lucky we found somebody as likable as Mike Johnson. I don't think there's another person in line like that, which means you're going to have a real mess as we look for somebody. And all eyes that whole time, kind of the evil eye, will be on those people who kicked out Mike. I mean, that'd be in addition to being wrong, it'd be a morally questionable decision. And I don't think he'll be rewarded by the voters back home. Mike Johnson is very popular with Republicans back home.
And certainly sounds like within the conference, too, given they've only found two who are willing to call for him to go. So I do want to ask, though, are they House Republicans necessarily committed to him, post-election when another leadership contest would come up? Or is there any indication that there'd be someone who wants to step up?
Nobody's talking about it right now. And of course, I think it comes down to, do we retain the majority or not? If we retain the majority, Mike Johnson has succeeded in what is arguably his most important goal. If we lose the majority, obviously there's a degree of failure there. Now, just like last time, you have to compare the ups or downs with what happens in the Senate, what happens with state legislative districts across the country. But I have not heard any names even thrown out behind the scenes as replacements for Speaker Johnson.
Now, as to the merits of what the his detractors are actually bringing up, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene circulated a fairly lengthy list of grievances to you and to all of your colleagues upon your return from the recess, basically outlining the issues that she had with the budget process. For Congressman Thomas Massie, who's now seconded that motion to vacate, he's mostly looking at the FISA extension and these foreign aid bills. Collectively, those three things are what has wound up happening in the Congress has been a little bit at odds, certainly with what House conservatives have wanted, perhaps even with the Republican base. Is there concern that at all that going forward in these, on these specific proposals is going to have a backlash either with voters or come November? Is there concern about that?
Well, I think the only backlash is going to be among other congressmen who are expecting something to happen at the border and a feeling among some of them that they've been misled. Like I said, we've been kind of promised for months now that there would be no Ukraine, no new money for Ukraine without the border solved.
Well, so jumping to the border, we actually have Alejandro Mayorkas, potentially facing an impeachment trial in the Senate. It's unclear whether they're actually going to take it up, but there's currently some floor debate. We expect a motion to table on those articles. They were delivered earlier this week. Do you think the Senate actually proceeds to trial?
I'd be surprised. First of all, Mayorkas is a Democrat, and the Senate is run by Democrats. So on that reason alone, I'd be very surprised if they move forward with impeachment.
And what do you think would be the implications of them actually refusing to even hear the trial? You know, this is one of the very rare occurrences that a sitting cabinet secretary has been impeached at all. The Senate refusing to take it up?
He is totally incompetent, but I don't think they'll take it up solely for partisan reasons. I'll just say, we don't care what a mess it is at the border. We are not going to pick on Joe Biden's handpicked Homeland Security czar.
Okay, so again, you're very reasonably sure that the only opportunity for Republicans on the border is going to be post-November.
Yes, I think that's true.
Well, in the meantime, we've seen, you know, estimates that fairly large amounts of illegal immigrants have actually crossed the border, you know, since Joe Biden came in, and we're expecting plenty more to do so in the interim. He has, what, 8 months or so before January, even if Donald Trump manages to take the White House?
Right. He's got another 8 months to run amok. Very scary. Plenty of time to get in another million people here who don't belong here.
Certainly so. So we're at this point where, in all likelihood, is HR 2, is that the focus? Well, if everything turns around, if Trump is president, you know, you retain the majority, the Senate gets it. Is that the linchpin?
I think we'll do more than just that, or should do more than just that. You got to remember, HR 2 passed over a year ago. And there are all sorts of flaws in the Biden border policy that were not identified at that time. I think we ought to clarify that there'll be some sort of stiff penalties for people who take advantage of what we used to call welfare benefits, who are here illegally. I hope we do something special about all the unaccompanied minors that are coming in the country. So not to mention, I think the public knows what HR 2 is. And for that reason alone, I think we should have a series of bills that clearly show that we don't care about the border policy of President Biden.
Well, Congressman, thank you for being with us today. We've covered quite a few things. Appreciate you coming on. Folks, we will be back after the break. Don't go anywhere.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, folks, welcome back from the break. That was Congressman Glenn Grothman representing Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. He's also the chairman of the Oversight Subcommittee on National Security, the Border, and Foreign Affairs. He certainly had some insights on the border and foreign affairs packages that are facing the House this week, but he also made a prediction that the Senate would dismiss the articles of impeachment of Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Well, while we were having the interview, the Senate did exactly that. They dismissed both articles in narrow votes. The House had approved articles of impeachment against Mayorkas in February and transferred them to the Senate earlier this week. They had accused him of a breach of trust and a willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law, specifically in regards to his handling of border policy. He's become something of a magnet for criticism of conservatives who take issue with President Joe Biden's immigration policies. And this impeachment was somewhat unusual. It's a fairly rare thing to see a sitting cabinet secretary face such a such a rebuke from the House. However, the matter appears to be put to bed. They shot down both articles in a 51-48 and a 51-49 vote. Democrats had largely accused the Republicans of waging a partisan attack on Mayorkas and contended that the articles themselves were devoid of merit. They were steadfast in that position throughout the entire cycle. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell was certainly outraged by the Senate's refusal to take up the articles and warned that they were setting a very dangerous precedent. But Grothman appears to have been vindicated in his prediction. And that seems to be the end of the matter. He was very adamant that Republicans' only opportunity to do anything of substance on the border is going to come after November, should they take the majority and the presidency. In other news, NPR editor Yuri Berliner, who recently made headlines by writing an essay criticizing the publicly funded outlet for having veered too far into activism rather than journalism, has since resigned. He was suspended in the wake of his publication of the essay, and indicated in a tweet that he felt the CEO was hostile to him and that he was disparaged within his own workplace and could no longer, you know, continue in his role. Now, ironically, he wrote that essay criticizing NPR in the Free Press. The Free Press was an outlet established by Barry Weiss, who created the organization after writing her own similar criticism of the New York Times. Legacy media outlets increasingly driving veteran journalists committed to finding the truth out of the industry, largely due to the increased conflation of activism and journalism. Certainly doesn't bode well for the legacy industry, however, may direct people more and more towards digital outlets such as, say, just the news. I don't know, something to think about. Lastly, Republicans in the Arizona legislature have shut down an effort to repeal the 1864 abortion law that the Supreme Court allowed to take effect last week. This is a, you know, this is a ban near total, with exceptions only for the life of the mother, that predates the Civil War. Well, comes in the middle of the Civil War, and it predates statehood. So that law has been permitted to take effect now that the Constitution is no longer regarded as having a right to abortion in it. That's due to the Dobbs versus Jackson Supreme Court decision. There have been calls to repeal it. The state legislature has thus far not done so. You have a Democratic governor and, you know, several Democratic state officials, but the legislature is in the hands of Republicans, and they have remained resolute in keeping it intact. Nonetheless, the efforts are going to continue. You've seen both former President Donald Trump and Arizona Republican Senate candidate Carrie Lake both call on the legislature to clean up the mess and come up with something a little bit different. Before that, abortion had been legal at a significantly higher gestational rate. Well, there was one at all. And we're seeing that dispute play out across the country, state by state. You know, now that the Roe v. Wade precedent is overturned, this is certainly becoming a sticking point for Republicans, something Democrats are hoping to capitalize on in the November elections. We've already seen it come through in a number of statewide referendums. Ohio comes to mind, in which voters rejected the statewide bans and established a constitutional right up to, I think, about 20 weeks. Florida is going to be facing a similar ballot initiative in November after the Supreme Court let both a 15-week ban take effect and approved it's a ballot referendum on the issue. Now, Florida by that time is going to have a 6-week ban because they had passed another, you know, piece of legislation that was designed to take effect 1 month after the 15-week bill took effect. Again, passed under the while the challenge was ongoing. All right, folks, that's everything for today. We are going to be coming back tomorrow, so don't go anywhere. Certainly hope to see you again.